Welcome back to Going Nowhere.
My favorite place.
It really is. And can you go back to going nowhere? Or are you just back to nowhere?
That's deep.
Yeah, kind of. I didn't mean to go that deep that fast. Yeah.
You just went.
I just went right in there. Hadn't even introduced myself. Yeah. I'm Laura Beth Bucklider.
And I'm Cynthia Vaca Davis.
Yep. And we are
nowhere.
We are nowhere. We are truly, truly nowhere. And we've been chatting for a minute before we hit the record button. So we've established ourselves in nowhere, and it's really nice.
Yeah, we are firmly planted.
Present. So quick check in. How are you?
Good. I came back from the gym.
That's always a good thing. Yeah.
For me, especially, it is because longtime listeners, I mean, across the, what, six episodes? Six?
Maybe your old podcast, too. I mean, they might know you, too.
They might, but I'm referring back to, I think it was our first episode, I talked about my life derailing.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
I had been, like, I was on a roll with the gym. I had been, like, really consistent, and everything was, like, coming together, and I was feeling really good. And then when everything in my life just kind of went kaput, I stopped going to the gym.
As one does.
As one does.
And it was winter, and it was,
All the things. And then all of those consequences that you can imagine would happen, happened.
Sure.
But I've gone, like, I think six times in the last 2 weeks. So
good for you.
I'm back.
That's a great average.
That's a great consistency.
That's not even a great average. That's just a great consistency. Yeah.
If I can keep it up, things will be good. So, what's going on with you?
I did not go to the gym today. Have a lot of exciting things going on. I have been to a lot of doctors lately. Just dealing with things that are my body as an intersex human, and actually confessed to the doctors we were talking about blood pressure issues because I'm that old. And I was like, well, I mean, I know a big part of this is that I'm out of shape. And the doctor was great. And he was just like, you know what? It's been winter. Everybody's a little out of shape.
Yep.
And even the winter exercises we want you to do, you've been fighting some chronic migraines and body pain and everything. So
that's a lot.
It was. Yeah. And he was just like, so yeah, some exercise would be good. And now that the summer's here and everything, but there was an invitation to grace from my doctor. For grace for myself. And that was powerful.
I love that.
Yeah. A lot of exciting new things going on, building a new coalition, creating a new job for myself. And
yay.
We'll have
to have a whole episode about that at some point.
At some point we will. Yeah. There are some coalition partners that I will probably bring on, and we'll talk more.
Marvelous.
More about that specifically. But speaking of conversations, we had a fantastic one.
Oh yeah.
Late last week. And a friend and colleague, Sarah Griffith Lund. Lund, as you'll hear me confirm, not Lund. I was trying to go all German on it.
Lund.
Lund, Sarah Griffith Lund, a pastor and author. Her latest book tackles the concept of neurodiversity, especially in faith communities and ministry contexts. And I think it's a conversation that not many people are having from the perspective that she was willing to have it.
Right. And it's an important conversation. I can't wait for everybody to experience it with us.
It is. Yeah. Politically relevant.
So very.
Right now. And so, yeah, wherever you are in relation to this topic, I hope it's something that is helpful in expanding your idea of how the world works and how people work and how wonderfully, wonderfully diverse we are as a population. So
marvelous.
Let's dig in.
Shall we jump in?
We shall. Well, Sarah, I have been really looking forward to this conversation. I've been looking forward to getting to introduce you to my friend Cynthia.
I'm excited.
Yeah, so Sarah Griffith Lund. And did I say that right? Lund?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well,
yeah, my husband was from Minnesota.
Oh, so,
so there's like the Lund grocery store and the Lund boats and all
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah. There you go. Okay, because I was reading it and I thought, I've been saying Lund forever, and all of a sudden I thought, that could be Lund.
Lund?
Lund?
Like the loons.
Yeah. Yeah, but I did do it in German in my head all the time.
Said that too.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so Sarah has a great body of work, and her most recent offering is Blessed Minds. Help me remember. You started with Blessed Are the Crazy?
Yeah.
Okay, and that was about your family and just dealing with mental health and walking through that space. You have Blessed Union, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, all right, and then Blessed Youth.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, all right, I'm on a roll. And then this is Blessed Minds, mm-hmm. which is breaking the silence about neurodiversity and deals a lot with neurospirituality and the intersection of faith and the neurospicy. I love that you worked that word in
yes.
text. One I'm becoming more comfortable with identifying with in my own space in different ways. So, yeah, just tell us a little about yourself. Tell us about your context and what you're doing. I've offered that three times and I'm still talking, so I'm gonna.
That's just like I don't interrupt.
No, yeah, that's great.
So there's another baby book that was born out of Blessed Youth. My publisher was like, "Hey, what if we wrote a book for youth?" So I was like, okay. So like 2 weeks it came to me. And so it's a survival guide. So Blessing Youth Survival Guide. And it's really a suicide prevention tool.
Ooh.
And it's like a booklet that you can create your own mental health plan and a safety plan. So that's really been a great thing just to share with folks and give away so that everyone, you know, has a safety plan, which is good to have. All of us.
It is good to have. And I mean, just to give some context, we are as we are recording on a day that it is that it's been on the headlines that the federal government is cutting funding to the LGBTQ suicide hotline and just devastating the work being done there. I thought about you and this conversation coming up tonight when I was reading those headlines and the articles that went with them. So tell us then a little bit more about bringing that into the context. You are a pastor in the United Church of Christ, and about your role just in mental health within the denomination and in that space.
Yeah, well, thank God for the Trevor Project. So let's just put in a plug for your Trevor Project, an incredible nonprofit, provides support, suicide crisis support, and maybe we can put that in a link somewhere for people 100%. To access.
Yep.
Yeah.
In the show.
Project is great. LGBTQ support. And
well trained and well equipped.
Well trained
people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So I am a UCC pastor of a local church. Been ordained for 23 years, and I also have complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And when I was growing up in the church, we didn't talk about these things, and it was really a culture of masking and just like fitting into this church environment where you wore your Sunday best and Jesus loves you and everything's good, and just open your heart to God's love. And I noticed that there are a lot of things happening in my family that were terrifying when it comes to acute mental health crises. And no one in the church was talking about it. So it was a very difficult, lonely journey for my family when we had people in the psych unit, people who were unhoused because of acute mental health situations. And we couldn't ask our church family to pray for us or help us because it was so taboo and so stigmatized. So part of my faith journey as a human and as a pastor is to create a healthier context for us to take off the mask so that we can be authentic about what our needs are for prayers, for support, for love, And then also how we do church and think about God and what's a theology of mental health justice. What kind of theologies of disability justice can make the church truly a place of love and belonging and care for every mind body?
That's every beautiful. Body mind. That's really
it's
beautiful.
Just like as I've lived more of my life, I've just realized there's so much more the church is called to do. And it's in a way that's the good news, is that there's a lot that the church is called to do. And so all of us can be a part of this movement of neurodiversity, mental health, disabilities, inclusion. And I think there's a lot of really beautiful parallels with queer justice and neurodiversity and the neurodiversity movement and the queer movement. There's a lot of intersectionality.
Yeah, so neurodiversity is a probably for many folks listening, perhaps a relatively new and maybe, I won't say mysterious, but undefined term.
Well, it's an umbrella term, right, Sarah?
Yep.
It is. Yeah. So kind of walk through for the sake of the book. Now, I will say I love, like a lot of books have a glossary at the end that will define terms. And so as you're going, you're flipping back and forth. When you all go read Sarah's book, there are at the beginning of each chapter, there are keywords that are used here and definitions for them, and it puts them in context. And I think that is incredibly helpful in talking about something that might be relatively new to people that we really don't have a strongly developed language for.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Can I tell a quick story about that first?
Yes, please.
So I was giving a talk at Princeton Seminary about mental health, faith, and ministry. And after I gave the talk, the professor and I were walking into town to get some lunch. And I was like, hey, you know, so what are you hearing? Like, what are your students talking about? What's new? And he was like, well, a lot of my students, these are folks from college going into seminary to be ministers, he said they're self-identifying as neurodivergent. And I was like, huh? Like, this was in 2023. And I was like, oh, tell me more about that. And so this is how I learned about neurodiversity. And I was like, I don't know that the church is ready for this. Like, how is the church going to welcome these incredible people who are going to come to be ordained? Like, let's help the church out here. So that's why I wrote the book. And so as I came to learn more about it, neurodiversity, basically the definition is the range of differences in brain function and behavior among all humans. Neurodiversity.
That's a huge umbrella.
Yes, and behavior.
It is. And so, so neurodivergent is a very often in conversation associated with the autistic spectrum, but not limited to by any stretch that. So in writing about it, and you mentioned those seminary students and those going into ministry, those in the church, who were you writing to?
So I try to keep in mind a broad audience, you know, for people who've never heard of this before, people who are neurodivergent themselves or have a loved one, people who are faith leaders, people who are lay leaders. And so there's a chapter about the neurodivergent minister. There's a chapter about neurospirituality, which I go a little deeper into my journey. So, you know, there was a book at the library called Neurodiversity for Dummies. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what I'm writing for the church.
Yeah.
For the church. Neurodiversity for the dummies in the church.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like writing about queerness for straight people.
Yeah.
And what would you say is the relationship between mental health and neurodiversity?
Oh, that's what I love. So that's the part that I think is the offering that I uniquely bring to this, is I am really pushing the boundaries of neurodiversity to include at the edges, you know, folks who have mental health experiences and diagnoses. And so the more I dug into it, I saw that, oh yeah, neurodiversity includes people like me, complex PTSD, because that actually does impact our physical brain. So the mm-hmm. neuroscience is amazing. Mm-hmm. And when we can do brain scans and see how trauma changes the brain. And so I have physical symptoms because of my PTSD. Like I can go into it, but trust me, it infects my brain and my body. And so I'm part of that neurodiversity spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so like I have things I do because I like to have little fidgets that are cute and fluffy.
That's a big but, fidget.
It is a big That's one. A so I just fix it when I'm at home doing yeah. things on the computer.
We are seeing a purple butterfly.
It's so great.
Butterfly really that soft. still has fantastic caterpillar vibes. And
yeah.
It seems oh, yeah. the wingspan covers like the whole entire front of Sarah. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So, like fidgets are a great example. I also consider my bracelets are always a fidget I have.
Okay.
But for people who, like me, have complex PTSD, for me, I can disassociate. And so a fidget helps me stay present in my body in this moment, reminds me I'm safe. I don't need to run away or shut down. I'm here and helps me focus.
And, you know, and this is the term neurodiversity, as you mentioned in the book, 1999 is roughly.
Yeah, that's right. Came.
So not yeah. not. See, I told you I read it. So, I mean, we're not talking about something that's been around for 50 years. Now, 1999 is longer ago than I like to think about. But in terms of scientific data and conversation, still relatively new as a defining term. Now, the realities of it has been around for a long time. We just didn't have language for that. So you emphasize too in the book that neurodivergence is not illness. It's not something that needs fixed. There's a comorbidity that happens with a lot of things. So where then does that put neurodivergent people in a culture that is increasingly trying to be more, what's the word I'm looking for? Less diverse.
Yeah, I mean, I think yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like an urgent conversation.
Yeah,
and that's where I think we can consider the liberation theological movements of womanist, Black, queer, other liberation movements. You know, so claiming that neurodivergent people and that broad definition are made in the image of God, and that's where I wonder, like, is God neurodivergent? If we're made in God's image, is there an aspect of God that is neurodivergent? Is God autistic? And I mean that in the best way.
Yeah.
That autism is an expression of the divine. And so what does that mean as we honor each other? Mm-hmm. That neurodivergent people are not broken. We don't need to be fixed. We can be blessed through accommodations, through support, through inclusion, through belonging, through conversation that honors what our needs are and graciously and joyfully provides accommodations and expects to do so. And so that kind of like extravagant hospitality of not like saying, oh, if a neurodivergent person comes to our church, then we'll see what they might need. We can already go ahead and prepare all of our spaces for neurodivergent people to be included in leadership. So there's like sensory resource libraries that churches are building, which I love. Pipe cleaners are pretty inexpensive. And so I love it that one church has just like a basket of pipe cleaners and people yeah. take them and they fidget with them. And It's just a lovely way to say, we want you here. We have things for you.
Yeah.
And we're less whole when you're not here. And my biggest hope is that this neurodiversity conversation would help destigmatize disability and mental health diversity and actually prevent suicide, because that's part of my story. I'm a suicide loss survivor. My niece, who was 16, she had ADHD. And now, as I kind of try to figure out how in the world did this happen, the research is showing ADHD has a higher risk of suicide.
Ooh.
And she had shared with me that her medication was helping her be an excellent student, but she said to me it made it harder for her to make friends. And so I do this work to honor her and to try to like help prevent another suicide. And I think the neurodiversity paradigm and movement can be a way to create a home for people and a community. To say, you know, to my niece, Sydney, you're not broken. There's nothing wrong with your brain. Like, your brain is incredible. And there are some more supports that we can provide for you so that you can shine your light and be exactly who you are. We don't have to try to fix it, but we can be more gracious with how we accommodate and companion you as you navigate the world with your brilliant, beautiful mind.
When you use the word urgent, like that really stood out to me, because I'm thinking about this moment we're in politically, where specifically autism has been in the news as a target. And I'm wondering, where do you see things going? And what are the risks? What's at stake with what's happening right now?
It's dangerous and it's really bad science.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we're hearing from elected leaders and appointed leaders is not based on best practices. And so that tells me there's a different motivator.
Right.
It's very politically motivated. It's not motivated out of a sincere desire to support the health of human beings who are autistic.
Yeah, it's homogenous is the word I was looking for a minute ago. We're looking for a homogenous culture where everyone is the same, looks the same,
mm-hmm.
expects the same, thinks the same. And you mentioned, you know, churches are less whole when neurodivergent people aren't there. As neurodivergent people, not as people conforming to the neuronormative center of what are often this defining faith communities. And I think my fear listening to the rhetoric is exactly that. It's the same as we're seeing in immigration. It's the same as we're seeing in LGBTQ protections. They are looking for that homogenous center that we don't have to think about where others are. Sorry, I got on a little bit of soapbox there, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
I mean, homogenous is the exact opposite of diverse, really. Literally.
Yes, yeah.
Well, and healthy ecosystems are diverse, and this biodiversity model is really what the neurodiversity paradigm in part is based on. A healthy ecosystem is diverse by definition, and humankind is no different. And I think as people of faith, we can call upon our values about that. It's really important, I believe, to say, you know, these are our values. And Thomas Armstrong talked about the brain forest. And the folks I worked with at Princeton, they have a curriculum called God's Brain Forest. It's neurodiversity and youth ministry. So think about the diversity of a forest. And a healthy, natural, wild forest has all kinds of different trees. You know, the pine, the oak, you know, all different beautiful maple. It's diverse. And that's how it thrives. And so also our brains are diverse and unique, and that is what is good for humanity, is to have diversity. It's who we are.
Yeah.
And we're back to science again. Imagine.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. Almost like it was done on purpose with order and structure. I want to shift gears a little bit, if that's okay. You mentioned the masks that you're tearing off, and the subject of masking comes up in a lot in the book, your book. The title of the book that I published in 2016 is Shattering Masks, and it's all about exactly that. It's coming out of this shell of everything that I believed I was supposed to be. Where did you find the masking as it relates to your own journey for neurodivergence or for the work that you were doing on the book? What is the motivation for it? What does that look like? How do those masks get shattered?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me goes along with to tell the true story is to heal. And you could say to tell the true story is to take off the mask, breaking the silence. And so for me, masking is all about blending in. It's about numbing. It's about going silent, not being noticed. And it's this white supremacy idea of perfection. And so the church really feeds into all of that. It's so toxic. The church teaches us how to mask, yes. Especially if, you know, in my situation. So I masked a lot of my mental health symptoms when I was little. Like I had, out of extreme stress and trauma, I had bedwetting. And so I just like pretended that wasn't happening. I had chronic stomach ache and pains. I went to the doctor and the doctor was like, nothing's wrong with her. And so those are just two examples of things that I was suffering from and just didn't want to tell anyone. When I went to be ordained, there's like a committee of people who are like, are you worthy to be ordained? You have to jump through all these hoops. And I was so skilled at masking everything I went through that this ordaining body, the final thing they said to me is like, well, Sarah, you have lived a charmed life. And it was just like, you know, I had perfected the mask.
Yeah.
But the church rewards people for masking.
Yeah.
It really does. And that's what we're trying to change, that culture.
The church, in my experience, is, and I went to, and you can edit this out, Laura Beth, if you want, but I went to the less good Church of Christ.
You know I won't. You know I won't.
Yeah. Not the United, the yes. Other Church of Christ. And I happened to share on a mission trip that I had gone through some depression and I was feeling so much better because I had gone to my doctor and he had prescribed some good medicine for me. And the associate minister looks at me with pity and says, are you in a good small group? And that was it. That was the conversation. I mean, I responded to him in some way that was irrelevant to my situation, but it was just so, so clarifying as to what, you know, what the culture there was as far as mental health.
I'm sorry that happened to you. That's terrible.
I'm not going to edit that out because I think it's relatable. I think people are going to. I hope people hear that and say, yes, that's what happened.
I think it's not a strange story. I think it's happened to
not me. Nearly as strange as I would have hoped it might have been. So what do you do with that when they look at you and they say you have this charmed life?
I loved it at the time.
Sure.
You know, I was like 24 and I was like, winning. Yes, I passed. Yeah. I won. I have the golden mask, right?
Yes. Like, yeah. Not only did I mask, but I have convinced the best of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did any part of you believe that?
Oh, sure. Because that's the thing, is that it really messes with your identity and you kind of forget. And for me, you suppress like the trauma and the dysfunction. It just, it's amazing the brain, how it tries to help protect you. And to be honest, it's a survival. It's about surviving a lot of times.
It is.
It's, yeah.
So fast forward to whenever it was, when did that mask come off?
You know, my, so part of the masking was my father's bipolar manifested itself in a way where he had anosognosia. So he didn't know he had all these symptoms, delusions, like hearing voices and paranoia.
Okay.
So he died from his bipolar because he wasn't able to care for himself. And so it led to a lot of his organs failing. So I was like 30 when he died, and I was pastoring a church, and they were so shocked that a younger person would lose their father. And they sent me these Hallmark cards of a little girl in a pink fluffy dress holding the daddy's hand. And like, it's just all these things that were just like so far from the truth of what my life was like as a daughter to my dad. And I got really angry, and I was so upset at these cards. And I thought, well, how would they know it was any different? You know, I never said a word to anybody about what my relationship was to my dad. And it angered me that I had been living this inauthentic life. And so I felt called to break the silence about that part of who I was. Because I also had the fear that I also was somehow bipolar, or because of my dad, like I was, and I use the word crazy, like as in a term of endearment, like for me,
yeah,
like I'm crazy too. And like, I don't want anyone to know. So nobody can find out. But part of my healing from my dad's death was to take off the mask and be like, okay. And it was really like for me and God to like get straight with each other.
Yeah.
So that I could really free myself to have God see all of who I was. Like, yeah. I was even trying to hide from God.
Mm.
So
so there's a moment of authenticity that comes out. Another buzzword, but this is the essence of what that is. It's when we get to be unmasked in front of ourselves, in front of God, in front of the church, families.
It's scary. It's terrifying.
It is. Yes. Yeah, I concur. When did you make that connection from masked to unmasked and authentic to neurodivergent?
Well, and then just to be fair, like the mask still comes on. Like,
oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like Phantom of the Opera mask. Like,
yeah. And I talk some about the difference between filtering and masking.
Yes.
There's moments that we behave in a way that to be appropriate and social. But yeah, there are times that the masks still.
You know what? There's something happened to me. I want to tell a story about masking.
Yeah.
So I have given talks about my story about mental health and my family's story. And there was this group of women in Indianapolis, actually. And it was like just some kind of like women in leadership. And it's invitation only to be part of this group. And they meet for lunch every so often. And I was invited as a guest to kind of tell my story, and I didn't know what to wear because these are like high-powered women, and I don't know how what you're supposed to look like. I'm a pastor, so I like bought a dress, you know, that I thought was pretty, and then I was uncomfortable wearing it, so I put on a blazer over it, and I was like, okay, I think I look okay, but that's like such a neurodivergent thing to like not know how to dress.
The dress, yeah, how to show up.
I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know what to wear. I didn't know what I was supposed to look like. So I gave my talk and I got a standing ovation, like this room full of high-powered women executives, just standing ovation, amazing talk. Well, it turns out later they invited me back and they were going to vote on new members. And so I was one of the people they were going to vote on to have join their club. So I'm there for the lunch and then I leave the room because they're voting. And you're just going home and then they'll let you know. Ooh. I never heard a word from these people. So I just feel like that is like such a story.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I know, it's like, you people, like, so I feel like I'm neurodivergent, and they knew it. They know I'm not like them. I couldn't pass as like being neurotypical.
I can relate to that, Sarah. I really can.
I can
and
too.
I've never told and... that story before.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Also, I'm a little mad about it. No, I'm glad you didn't mention any names because I live here too. And yeah.
Oh, this reminds me of the Christmas ornament exchange of 98.
I kind of think I've heard that story. I heard that. Okay. I mean, that was all of a sudden really familiar to me. Or maybe it was like, yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember if we've talked about it. But, I don't know. But... Yeah. Yeah. Everybody was supposed to come. It was a group of women, church women. And everyone was supposed to come with an ornament. And everybody was supposed to leave with an ornament, was the way it went. And it was this game. And you could take an ornament from like this central pile, or you could steal an ornament.
Yeah, like it's
right. Like
a, yeah, Dirty Santa or whatever. Yeah.
I had about 30 ornaments pass through my hands.
Like they kept stealing from you.
From
oh
me,
my
only from me.
They're bullying you.
There, and yeah. It got to the end, and I didn't even have an ornament. And the organizer on the way out was like, "Oh my!" Through, and she's pawing through the wrapping paper, just in here. Let's keep looking. And she pulls out this angel with a broken wing. Listen to me. Yep.
It's like, go ring some bells. Different wing. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Seriously, man. Yeah. No, but there's this. But yeah, why do people get singled out in a group, and why does it matter that much?
Right.
So another thing that came up earlier in our conversation, listening to you, when I'm doing advocacy for LGBTQ people in churches and stuff, and a lot of times I'll go in and they're like, well, we're still getting our head around same sex relationships and marriages and such, and we're not ready to talk about gender diversity and everything. And a lot of times my response is, you have that backwards. Let's understand gender diversity. Let's understand, how gender is not as simple as it is. And I'll tell my story of my intersex diagnosis. And a lot of times when I'm one-on-one with a pastor or something, I'll tell that story. And I'll say, okay, now, who do you want me to date? Mm-hmm. You know, just because once you understand the diversity of gender, gendered relationships become more tricky and challenging. And I can't help but wonder if that the whole neurodiversity umbrella is the next first step. If we understand not only that, I mean, gender is diverse, but gender is diverse because we are neurally diverse, and the way we process gender, the way we process roles, the way we process perceptions, the lenses that we look through life with, that's what we need to understand first, so that we can understand gender, so that we can understand relationships, so that we can understand the essence of belonging, which is, I think, the center of this the entire conversation, especially when it comes to faith communities and everything. I don't know. I mean, I just, any thoughts or... I realized I didn't put a question there.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to read that book. I'm reading that book.
I was so happy to read your book and feel seen, to have people in my family feel seen and understood. And just so much hope. There's just so much hope to know that the mask can come off, and we can look at each other and we're like, oh, that's different. That's maybe even weird. We might even go weird sometimes. And mm-hmm. But then we just sit. We don't walk away. We're just there for it.
I have to say, I've learned so much in my work with the disability ministries of the UCC.
Another function. I mean, that.
Yeah. So it intersects. So mental health, disabilities, and neurodiversity. But the disability communities I've been in are so incredibly supportive of how people show up.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's like, we just want you here. That's all that matters. Like, however you got to do that, however we got to make it happen, like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
It's encouraging.
It's so hopeful. It's so encouraging. Yeah.
To know that there are churches that do care and that there are churches that I personally believe the church should be at the forefront of all of these issues that we've touched on today, mental health, neurodivergence, supporting LGBTQI+, immigration, you know, whatever. These are all of these, these are all people. There's not just categories, these are people. And all of these people are the people that Christ would be running to. They would be his people. And yet the church is still doing what it's been doing since the New Testament times of pandering to only a certain group that just fits in certain lines. And that's frustrating, but it's so encouraging to hear that that's not the whole church.
Yeah. I mean, the church started under Jesus' influence as the other.
Mm-hmm.
The othered ones, and somewhere along the way became the mainstream. And not somewhere along the way. I mean, several places along the way to have gone through.
We can pinpoint some.
That's a whole other podcast.
I love what you said, Laura Beth, about the brain and like thinking about gender and mental health and disability and how much of this is like, how much is our neurology involved in that? Our neuropathways and how we think of our identities.
Yeah. And I
think and then just to add to that, spirituality, because Lisa Miller in Columbia University, she's been doing brain scans and brain research around spirituality and says there's a spiritual docking station in our brain.
Mm.
And the research around mental health is that's where the brain lights up when there's like depression is very similar to the place where spirituality is in the brain processing. So I think there's a lot even there about neurospirituality, queer spirituality, you know, what is going on when we think of our spiritual identities.
Yeah, and I think the both the challenge and the beauty of the neurological piece of that is that the neuroscience is so still emerging. We know a lot about endocrinology. We know a lot about internal organs. Still not everything. We're still learning on all of those fronts. Still guessing on a lot of those fronts. But there's still so much mystery to the brain and the whole nervous system and how it impacts and relates to the whole body that I think, I've been working with a neurologist and some things going on physically in my brain, not just function-wise, but and I'm like, well, what does this mean? He's like, yeah, we don't know. Mm. He's like, and it's okay that we don't know. We know we don't know. And we're watching it. And, you know, we know it's not this. And we can eliminate those things. So we don't have to worry about those things. But we might still get to worry about these things later. And I mean, it's just, it's a guessing game. And it means that there is so much still that we get to explore. There's so much still about our bodies, about the way we perceive and engage with the world that we're still figuring out. And that's exciting to me.
It is.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. And to kind of weave in the pieces of scripture, of church traditions, I keep on going back to the mind of Christ. In our conversation today, what does that mean? For queer...
The Jesus brain forest.
Yeah, Jesus brain forest.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, Laura Beth, it really makes me think of some conversations we've had in the past. When you talk about gender being diverse and our, you know, our neurology being diverse. It doesn't surprise me that those things would connect, because I remember you talking about like five different systems that have to do with gender. And one of them is the brain. You know, you said primary sex characteristics, secondary sex characteristics, endocrine systems, chromosomes, and the brain.
Good job. There you go. Yeah.
Quote you. at least a biweekly basis.
Yeah. And I mean, I list those in order of development usually. And I always put the brain last, not because it develops last, but because we understand it the least. And there is the most mystery in it. One, our theme right now through this season of the podcast is peace as a path to resistance. And there's so much of the narrative and the rhetoric that seeks to pull peace out of the minds of the othered, the immigrant, the neurodivergent, the queer communities. As someone who is actively putting your voice out there on behalf of this community, on behalf of, you know, yourself and your own family, I mean, I can relate to that borderline between self-protection and advocacy. What are some things that you would name as maintaining some internal peace in the midst of this?
I have learned to really find joy in my daily life through being silly and playful. And that's really beautiful thing that we all can be more playful and silly.
Stuffed purple butterflies.
Yeah, exactly. So, So I do that. I try to really pay attention to my friendships and love my friends, love my family. Mm. So that's how I do peace. I take time for kind of introvert days. So I have like a day of silence once a month, and walk in the woods. I can walk by my house. But also I wanted to answer that by saying the person who is in the White House now loves to dominate the narrative. Mm-hmm. And so one way that we can peacefully contribute to resistance movements is to provide alternative narratives.
Yeah.
And I love that Blessed Minds is here now, because this is my narrative. One of many voices, right? And so, Laura Beth, I would love to amplify your voice, how you bring in the queer gender identity into the neurodiversity conversation. I think that's critical. And we need that. We need to hear your voice with that. So that is a peaceful way to walk the path of resistance, is by sharing our stories so that there's not this one dominant narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I mean, the principle there is that in a world that seeks to sow chaos, peace is disruptive.
Okay, so I'll bring in the closer here.
Okay.
Yeah, so I always like to end our conversations with a question, the same question.
She says, and she always likes to. She taught me, and I can't end an interview without this anymore.
She's a good closer.
It is. It's fantastic.
What I ask you, Sarah, is what is there anything that we should have asked you, but we didn't?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could say something about the book.
Absolutely.
So in talking about like the audience for the book, I wanted to write it also for other neurodivergent folks. And so I played with it. And I really tried to bring my playful spirit into the book itself. So I wrote neurodivergent parables about Jesus and other folks. I just like imagine these stories about neurodiversity in the Bible. I put in visual symbols throughout the book. And so there's hearts, there's prayer, there's like a dove, there's other images. And then I added language that for me was bringing in the sense that this is for people of faith. So there's like a benediction at the end, and there's like a welcome and announcements. So I really had a lot of fun with that, making the book itself more accessible with keywords and the glossary and just space for people to have images along with the words.
Awesome.
And I wrote the book after I had gone on sabbatical, and the theme of my sabbatical was joy, joy to the world. And I had an experience when I was in Kauai with a spiritual director, and I had this vision of a brain coming down. It was like a brain with a blueprint, and I had no idea because I had a brain. It was like giving me another brain. And that was in 2003. And so I feel like this book is coming out of that. It's like the blessed mind that was given to me in that vision. And I've had folks who've read it say to me, this book brings me so much joy. And these are folks who tell me they have bipolar disorder, they're neurodivergent, and that the book gave them joy. And I love that. I absolutely love that.
Your parable around here it is. I'm just going to read it, and we're going to kind of let that close us out. This is the
benediction,
chapter 7 of Sarah's book. This is neurodiversity and intersectionality, which is a chapter obviously that resonated deeply with me, but. This is neurodiversity, a parable of unmasking. The Samaritan woman learned to hide her multiple intersectional identities behind a mask. This is how she kept herself unseen and safe. She wasn't sure whether Jesus would want to know the real her. But when she met Jesus at the well, she was able to come out of hiding, and her life changed forever. Jesus saw her for who she truly was, without a mask, and Jesus blessed her. She blessed Jesus, too, by drawing cool water for him to drink. Two blessed minds found a sense of belonging and interconnection at the well. That was it. I think that I got goosebumps again just reading it. So,
like, I don't know where that came from. I was like, I don't know.
I don't know
where that came from.
It came from a peaceful, empathetic, sensitive heart. And we are very, very grateful that you shared that with us today.
Thank you.
She's such a dynamic conversation partner.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
And so honest and genuine. Any major takeaways?
So, it really impressed me that despite the fact, as we discussed, that the church as a whole is not really tackling this, talking about this, doing the things that they should be doing, like getting out and leading the way, and that's discouraging, but to hear that there is an actual pastor who is doing this work, to hear about the Fidget Library.
Yeah.
The thought that goes into that, and the idea to not only just give lip service to everyone's welcome, but to truly do what's necessary to make people feel welcome in practical ways. I think that was something that was very encouraging for me.
Yeah, I was actually sitting in church this last Sunday watching some kids in the row in front of me play with some pipe cleaners.
That were love it.
And yeah. Yeah, it's simple. I mean, it really is simple and beautiful and creates space for all sorts of ages and mindsets and mentalities. And to me, I think the idea of intersectionality, especially with the queer community, I mentioned at one point in our conversation, the comorbidity, the overlap of diagnosis of neurodivergence within queer spaces within the LGBTQ plus mm-hmm. community. And I just think that the power of understanding the diversity of how brains function is just sets the stage so much stronger than most anything else that's on the table for understanding queer people, for understanding other diversions and other diverse thoughts and mentalities and approaches to life.
Yeah.
And it's not,
I loved how you connected those. I thought that was powerful.
Yeah. And I mean, she does such a fabulous job of it in the book. So one more plug for the book.
Yay.
Blessed Minds, Breaking the Silence About Neurodiversity. Find it where you buy books. Someday we're going to have an outlet so that you can buy like books through us.
Like an online store.
So when I tell you to go buy a book, I can actually like get a penny out of it or something.
Yes. I love this.
Yeah. Cause we're in it for the money. Clearly.
Yeah, clearly. The ads, right?
Right. Yeah. 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 Someday we'll figure out how to
monetize,
how to sustain this. But in the meantime, I'm so glad to do this with you, and
I'm loving it.
If for no other reason, it's an excuse to hang out with my friend and talk to amazing people.
I know, right? I just do this just for free.
I know. It's almost like we do.
It's almost like that.
All right. Well, we've got some more conversations lined up for free.
For free.
Nowhere. I mean, it's nowhere. So, I mean, no cost feels somewhere.
It's apropos.
At this point in time. But yeah, some great conversations. So get lined up. Look forward to being back.
All right.
All right.
I'll be here.
I'll be nowhere.
Fair.
I'll be now here.
Now here. Yes.
Yeah.
And I hope you will be too, listeners.
All right.
All right.
See you soon, friend.
Bye.